Welcome to this week's Foch's Corner. I'm not your host, Mark Jerome. This is TW. Actually, the first piece of feedback we got last week was, hey, could we have each person introduce themselves? Because I don't know the voices very well. So why don't we kick it off, Phony?
What's happening, TW? Yeah, I'm Phony Bennett. I'm not Phony Bennett. I do Phony Bennett on Twitter. And hey, are we supposed to do bios here?
Oh, no. I think it's good enough. Just so people have an idea. And then we have the hilarious Chris Havlicek. Chris, you want
to? Yeah, sure. Chris Havlicek, a.k.a. Hav. Happy to be here with the fellas for another rabble-rousing evening.
Yes. Fresh is going to join a little late. Mark is going to join a little late. He's coming out of a practice. But today we're doing another mailbag, back by popular demand. We got questions from social media, our Locker Room Access forum, Instagram, Facebook, just a hodgepodge.
Cool to get feedback because it lets us know there are some people listening.
Right. It's always nice to know it's not just our parents and wives listening. The first question we have from Andrew Averbach: has Trey Murphy sought transfer waiver? Likelihood of him getting it and effect on lineup if granted? Three-parter.
That's like a White House, press room question where they ask three.
And I've got two follow-ups.
Yeah,
that's right.
Let's focus on what happens if a waiver is issued.
Yes.
Let's
go with that.
I that's the part that I'm most interested in talking about because I think it's probably a difference maker. I have high expectations for this season, but if Trey Murphy is available, I've heard people say he's immediately the second best player on the court. I haven't seen enough to know that, but the fact that those kinds of things are being thrown around, I would say at the very least it means he's going to make a difference this year, and he's going to take some minutes. And then there's the knock-on effects of chemistry and whatnot with that, and guys losing minutes. But I think it's a huge difference maker. It raises the ceiling a little bit. What have you heard, Ev?
I agree with everything you said. The question I have is more around the timing. We haven't played basketball in 8 months, 9 months. Is this the typical transfer waiver time, or like, why is it happening when we're so close to the season? That could be a rules thing, but I don't know.
Right. I mean, we got to assume they're trying, right? Why not? With the way the NCAA has said, it's basically a free year. I imagine once they announced that, we kicked off let's try to get a waiver for Trey. Maybe right, that's why it was delayed. I don't know.
There's zero reason not to.
Yeah. I mean, so
if it's free and maybe he still doesn't play,
right.
Because the flip side, what I've always heard is in regards to Virginia is that that redshirt year allows them to spend more time in the gym than they could in season when they have to play with those muscles. So if they say, they could always say, no, we want, we want the physique to be here and the strength to be here, whatever. But otherwise, I mean, why not?
Available?
I agree.
I have a question for, I don't know if either of you have probably knows this more better than anyone, but on the scout team, they call it green team here. Is there a almost mirage effect of that? Meaning a guy who's on the scout team is like got the confidence because he doesn't have the pressure and he's hitting everything. He's playing all parts. He's playing out of his mind. But then when he's off the scout team and he's on the first team, a whole different ballgame. Is that true? Is that a myth?
You're talking to one of the premier scout team players in the history of college basketball. And the first thing I'll say is that I was always a better player, and this is mildly embarrassing, but also true. One of the things that I did my last 2 or 3 years as a scout team member, specifically if the opponent we were playing had if the best player on the other team was a two guard, I was asked to emulate them.
Right.
Okay. Right. Whenever I did that, I played so much better than when I emulated myself.
When you played as yourself.
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly. I was way better. I'll give you some examples. Rodney Monroe. Like, I lit Cornell up for a week when we were getting ready to play NC State because I was Rodney Monroe. You know, you name the good shooting guard, and I was better at being them than I was myself. That's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say is, yes, there is less pressure when you are a scout team player. You have the green light. No one's really that mad if you take a bad shot. And there were times when I would move into the, you know, onto the other side, and I would be more tentative. I think that's natural, especially early on for someone that's new to it. But, you know, the great Bob Rotella always talks about trusting and letting go, and the player that can go from green team and dominate and then dominate on the starters team, that's the guy that's going to be a real factor in the games.
Like no conscience. Yeah, because you hear that a lot, right? The guy on the scout team is always like everyone else. We hear that constantly with the whoever's the red shirt, whoever's the sit out, just killing it in practice. And everyone's like, wait till he gets in. Then he gets in and doesn't do all that well. And everyone's like, what happened? But
yeah, the other thing I'll say, you just reminded me, is when you're a starter and you're solidified and you're in practice and you're guarding a second teamer, the juices are not flowing. Like Cornell did not get hyped up to play against me, but I got hyped up to play against Cornell. Right. So right. I was going 100%.
Right.
He might have been going 75 or right. 50 or whatever in practice. So there is a difference in not only kind of scout team versus starting team, but also game speed in a real ACC game is no joke.
All that said, Trey Murphy sounds like he's going to be everything I've heard. He's got it all. He was a guard. Now he's a big, and he's transitioning really well and perfect for the game that we play today. So let's hope he gets that waiver.
Tony has had some really smart transfer pickups over the years. And we've obviously Sam, we're still waiting to see what he is, but we have high hopes for that. And I mean, with Trey Murphy, but I mean, the, you know, guys like Anthony Gill, I mean, we've had guys that Virginia wasn't their first choice, but it's guys they know a lot about. I think, did they recruit Trey Murphy, or is he just somebody that exploded? Because I don't remember him.
I think they originally recruited Trey Murphy.
Did they? Wow.
Right. Hey everyone, it's Mark Jerome. I heard the open T-Dubs, and I heard the gentleman asking if we could introduce ourselves, so I appreciate that. Thank you for the comment. I'm going to contest that one, where you talk about first team and second team, guys getting up to play against each other. I think that's also not – this is no attack or sale on who was your – JJ? When you were coaching Jeff Jones? Bennett's not standing for that, right? And no, guys are fighting for playing time.
Yep. So I agree with you, Mark. I totally agree with you, but I'll say this. I'm not talking about, and this is a good point by Mark, I'm not talking about the first 2 months of the season, including practice and all that. I'm talking about when you kind of settle in and you're halfway through ACC season and you know the rotation. But, you know, I don't think they were – my point was that not that – anyone was loafing. My point was that the scout team guys were 150% all the time trying to earn that.
Yes.
And a guy like Brian Stith, like why, you know, go that hard? And he was always a competitor, always. But you're not going as hard. Brian didn't go as hard against me in practice as he went against NC State or Duke or Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, yeah, if you're a guy that's not seeing the floor, I mean, that's your moment is when you're going against these.
I just know when I've watched practices at UVA and I know some of the drills they're doing and some of the players that are involved in the drills, there's that will to win every single drill.
Right.
And one of them is related to me. And he is as intense as it gets on everything because he's like his father. Like, there's nothing I'm not competing in every time, whether it's a checkers game against my newborn, right? or like I'm going to debate against whomever.
How many fights did Ty get into on the asphalt courts?
Not a lot. Not no fist fights, and he didn't play a lot of asphalt basketball. I mean, unorganized. He played organized.
Gotcha.
But there was that will to win always, and no matter what we did. So I think I hear you, and I think for the most part, I would agree with you. Have where a lot of guys, like for instance, take Allen Iverson, his whole thing. We're talking about practice. Right. I think that's probably most people. I think you're right. So I'm going to agree with you, but I think under Bennett, I think if you weren't giving your all, you were risking getting yelled at, right? Yeah, even midway or toward the end of the season. But then again, you know, your practices are different toward the middle and end of the season than they are in the beginning of the season, right? Where you're going, you're not going 2 hours at the end of the season and midseason. Right. You're kind of going 45 minutes and you're not doing a lot of intense stuff and you're going over scout team stuff. And so, you know, it's a different climate.
I agree. And I'll re-challenge your challenge and ask you to reflect on this. So Ty, his last year, you know, big time player on a great team, probably not going as hard, you know, second half of his third year than he was first half of his first year, if that makes sense. And smartly so, by the way. But look, a lot of it, at the end of the day, here's my last final word on this. Whenever it got heated, everybody, you know, whenever it got really competitive, and sometimes it just ramps up for no other reason than you just want to win, everybody goes up hard all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just know that at that level of play, everyone's super competitive. And so I agree and disagree and then re-agree with Mark.
I think I agree with you. I'm going to leave it at that.
All right. The next question I'm going to skip because it's who signs with us next. I don't have any tea leaves to read. Let's go with Jazznut, a.k.a. Brian Zajic. With the new one-time transfer rule in effect next year, what is your forecast on the percentage of Power 5 student athletes that will transfer next season? I would think 20% conservatively, but would love to hear this from the LRA podcast interviewers.
I've thought about this a lot. I'm going to go with 28.63%.
One third.
How did you arrive?
Almost one third.
How did you arrive?
Just shy of a third.
One out of three guys.
I don't know. I mean,
repeat that one. Repeat that one again.
With the new one-time transfer rule, what percentage of Power 5 student athletes will transfer?
I mean, that seems high to me.
20% seems high?
20% seems high to me. I mean, that's one out of five. So on your average, I mean, how many scholarships do they have now? 13 or something?
13, yeah.
13. So you're talking 2.3 players or something like that. I don't know.
Like three kids leaving.
Maybe. Two to three kids leaving. I mean, well, how different? What's the current transfer rate? Because now that actually doesn't seem so high.
I
think it's super high when you took it. I mean, like seven kids left Wichita State alone.
Right, right. And so, I mean, where I think –
I'm sorry. Go ahead, coach.
Oh, no, I was just going to say where I think you're going to see a bigger impact is going to be on the mid-majors, and you have to worry about Power 6 teams poaching those kids that they weren't quite there out of high school. Maybe Coach went and saw them in the gym a couple times, and they didn't get that offer, and now it's just an easy transition, and some of those mid-majors become stepping stones. Not the top tier mid majors, they might still be safe because they've got a foothold, but these other ones, it makes a much easier decision, I think, if you don't have to sit out.
All right. Here's my reasoning
behind the high transfer rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did we lose Mark?
Did.
I'll give you the actual.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I think we lost you for a minute.
No, I'm here. I'm just rejiggering my charger.
Can I? Okay, go ahead, T-Dubs. T-Dubs, give the actual transfer.
I'll give you my reason why. Okay, so over the past 3 years, the number of confirmed end-of-season transfers has stayed relatively flat. 689 in 2017, 704 2019, 694 in 2019. Now, it doesn't give a percentage.
But that's not a percentage at all, TW. You promised me a percentage.
1,066 student athletes were in the portal in 2018-19.
1,066, but well, how many? So we know there's 352 D1 schools, right? Something like that. That'll be good enough times 13 scholarships each, so that's 4,576. And so what do we'll say 700 divided by 4,576. So that's 15% already. So I mean, yeah, 20% seems pretty low, I guess. Yeah. I mean,
does that include the seniors too? The fourth years, the guys that have left?
Yeah, you've got to figure 25% are leaving naturally. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right.
We need to. Yeah, so
it's high. It's really high already. I don't think it's going to go up too much more.
Well, here's the thing. It could rise. The number could increase by a lot. Because next year, how many guys, if there's not a full season, coaches are going to want seasoned guys. They're not going to want freshmen. True.
Yeah.
So that number could get a lot higher.
Right. With a free year. You get a free year and a transfer.
I was talking to somebody from UVA the other day. And between for UVA, the extra year is going to matter, but it's not going to matter as much as to the smaller D1s and the mid-majors, right? And first of all, the small D1s and mid-majors aren't going to be able to afford incoming guys and guys returning. So they have to make a decision.
Right.
But the transfer rule is going to hit everybody. It's going to hit everybody hard. And if I'm a smaller mid-major and guys haven't played based on COVID and based on not playing a full season in college or high school, a kid in high school hasn't played now if doesn't play this year for almost 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to transfer.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Right. And a lot of guys who are looking to are going to be looking to transfer once they don't play. A lot more people are looking to transfer now than in the past when they didn't play their first year or second year.
So it could be a free for all this coming season with that, the combination of the extra year of eligibility and the no sit out rule and COVID. That sounds like a recipe for like 50% transfer.
I want to go back to the mid-major thing, because Mark, I think you bring up a really good point, particularly with the mid-majors, is that I think they're a lot more likely to have five-year guys. And given the value of experience and success in college basketball, are we in for a little bump over the next few years in the success of mid-majors just because they more so than the P6 schools are putting experienced teams on the court?
Yeah, I was phony. Good, really good point. I would say that to a degree has already happened. So in the last 10 years of the one and done, you've seen a lot more teams competing at a really high level late in the tournament that are mid-majors. And I think that will just accelerate it. And the other thing I'll say is in regards to transfers, rarely do you see someone transfer. Well, I won't say rarely, because you're looking at Sam Hauser. Most transfers are people that are at a big school, a big Power 5 school. They're not getting PT, so they're going to drop down to a mid-major. Okay, it does happen when there's someone that's killing it in a mid-major and they want to jump up like a Sam, and there's other examples, but most people are dropping down to play. Okay, I thought about it when I was playing, do I want to go Ivy League and play a lot, or do I stay here? And so, when it comes to that, I think the mid-majors are in a great position to really continue their rise, and this is going to add to it.
Completely agree. And here's the other pieces. The other element that people aren't talking about. Sorry, I dropped my phone. I'm not sure mid-major kids or even high-major kids who are getting that additional year are going to be, if they're not going to play professional basketball, either in the NBA or G League or overseas, how many people are ready to jump into a tough job market and leave school?
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Look, leaving school and working for the first time is hard enough, but it's harder when, A, you've got a year of eligibility that's kind of dangling out there, and B, you're walking into kind of the environment we're in right now. So, a lot to be seen over the next, 6-8 months.
So much uncertainty.
Well, Locker Room Access is hiring for anyone. Anyway, Dan Buckman with the next question. Buckman 08. What is our expectations for Caden Cedric? Will he play the four much? What does this mean for Cafaro? Basically, how's our depth looking on the front court?
Well, Caden had mono, right? I believe he's back.
Caden now. Had mono, right? That was the latest.
But that probably set him back, and so I would say it's almost a certainty that Cafaro is going to be in line ahead of him, but. Again, we're going to see so many lineup changes. Everyone's going to be given some run. You hear different things about guys, but you know, bottom line is when the season starts, those guys are going to get some opportunities. You're going to know real quickly who did well in practice by who and when is getting
who's getting run, the minutes.
But they'll have their chances.
And I also heard Statman grew. I think. Coach Bennett said Statman grew a couple inches this offseason, so I think he's whatever 6'8" now.
Yeah, so we saw Jay Huff last week in that video, and he looks all grown up. And then somebody tweeted a picture pictures of Statman and Cafaro, their last year's pictures versus this year's pictures, and they both look like 6 or 7 years older. They've right. obviously filled out, and I don't know if that's the COVID effect or what, but this looks more and more like a team of men and not boys.
Wait, T-Dub, are you saying Statman grew to a couple inches?
Yeah, so that's what Coach Bennett said at the media day.
Wow, well, that's impressive. I mean, I remember hearing about David Robinson at Navy, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Always the story.
That was always
growing a lot. And, you know, I grew an inch my freshman year. But, you know, that's
He's 6'8". He said he's 6'8" now, so I don't know what he was before. 6'6"?
You know, maybe he got some of that vaccine early. He was in a test trial. And it,
yeah, maybe.
He's a genetic study major, just a coincidence.
Yeah. I like it.
He got the Regeneron like Trump, and he's feeling like Superman now. It's good.
Mark, what are your expectations for the front court this year? You know, obviously Huff and Hauser.
I think it's going to be could be trial by jury. It could be, I think we know Jay's going to start. And I think there's going to be an opportunity for any of those guys to, who's going to be the toughest, who's going to rebound, who's going to, you know, UVA does not need a lot of scoring from that position.
Right.
As outside of Jay, who's expected to score. But as far as Poppy and Sedgwick and Caden and McCoy, I think you have some options, and you have some certainly have some fouls to give, right? If you have the three-headed monster and they can all play and they all have some experience.
Yeah. And other than Caden, you know, we've not seen him in college. The other two, with what we saw last year, neither of them jumped out or became the obvious guy to get the minutes. And so much of it is going to be that development over the summer that we haven't seen and the consistency that they can show when they get in there.
I mean, I think the one thing Jack Salt did was he came in and established a physicality that set the bar. And then, you know, I feel like Cafaro could do that. I don't know about Cedric.
Yeah,
I think seen him play. So
yeah, that'd be my guess. I think he could be that guy.
Yeah. Next question. Daniel on, what's the biggest what if during the TB era recruiting wise? Was it Sasha Kalia Jones? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, my take is probably just because of the dominoes that fall after that, and my timeline gets really weird, but Sasha committed, then Jay committed, then Sasha decommitted, but I think that's what allowed us to get Momedy. Is that
or DeAndre,
or was it Dre? And that's where but the bottom line is if that domino doesn't fall, something changes, and a piece of that national championship team changes. So it's that butterfly flapping its wings thing. I like how things worked out. So like I'm really hesitant to take the time machine back and upset the balance.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
I mean, maybe Sasha would have led us to two championships in a row or something, but it would have changed the lineup on that team, obviously, and somebody that ended up being very important to this team.
I think Jay Willie was on the Jay Willie show. He did his biggest recruiting what ifs, but he had Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, Victor Oladipo as in what ifs. What are those guys?
You know, those guys that ever showed any interest in the program? I mean,
they did. Yeah, they all made official visits.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, Zion. Okay. like, what if you could just get anyone? But okay.
I think Jay Willie said those guys all had official visits and then cut us in their final list. But
those are three good guys.
Those are three.
Sure.
Really good. I don't think.
And Kyrie, you guys know the story about Kyrie, but his dad, Dredrick Irving, was a great player at Boston University.
Exactly.
At BU when I was in Boston. And my good friend, Coach Amorcino, was instrumental in the BU program. So I was connected to that. And what a great player. If Kyrie had come to UVA, any team did great with Kyrie. And if you remember his freshman year at Duke, most of it he missed, and then he came back for the final game.
Yeah, he played like 11 games or something.
Right? Yeah.
He came back for the tournament, and that was it.
I think he came back for the final game.
How was it?
You can check that, T-Dub. Yeah. I think it was literally they made the finals, and the big question was, do you bring Kyrie back? And they brought him back, and they didn't win.
Huh.
But check that out. I might be wrong.
Yeah, that sounds right. The big what ifs. Next one from YKD. That's a great name. When's the last time we had three players on the Hall of Fame award watch list? What impact does it make?
And you're looking for a stats guy to say when the last time that happened was, but. I'm just thinking, man, if we had Bob Cousy and Julius Irving and
what's the other one?
Wilt.
Yeah.
Like if you had all three of those guys on a team, I think you'd win a lot of games.
A Hall of Fame watch list?
What? No, what it's there's we have three different players on these various watch lists. So Kihei is on the Bob Cousy list, and I think Sam is on the list, and Jay is on the list, and it's like Wilt and Dr. J, you know, awards list, and. You know, sure. It's meaningful because, you know, these lists are the top 50 players or top 25. I don't know how many guys are on the list, but projected going into the season. So it's significant in that we have so many guys that are well regarded. But I just see all the lists and I was like, man, what if you had those actual guys on one team? You'd be pretty good.
Yeah. I'll say it. You know, I don't know what Tony's saying, but I can guess what he's saying. And it's guys, that's great. Congrats. It's preseason. Now let's go work our ass off and actually win a whole bunch of games, which will help you get further along that list. You know, preseason awards, I remember Bryant, Stith, and Crotty were on a lot of them. And I remember Crotty just saying he had to fly somewhere and he was like, I wish I didn't have to go. I'd rather just stay here and practice. And, you know, that's the kind of guy he was. And I always remember that.
If I circle back to the Kyrie,
yeah,
he lost. He suffered a ligament injury in his right toe, ninth game of the season. Then he came back. Duke played Hampton in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And that was his first game since the injury. And they advanced to the Sweet 16 before losing to Arizona.
Okay, so he played two games.
Two games.
Yeah.
Crazy. In terms of the watch list, I don't think it matters. It's my personal opinion.
Right. I mean, it's nice to know these guys are well regarded, but I probably knew that anyway, just right. because of all the other awards. And I mean, it's fair to say if all three guys end up winning those awards, then we probably had a pretty good season.
Maybe he's alluding to the fact that the last time we won the national championship when we had Ty, Dre, Kyle on. Watch this. I don't know.
I'm sure the watch lists, like the award shows on TV a few years ago, there's a lot of them. And it's a nice accolade, as Phony said, but like, those guys aren't focused on that. The coaching staff isn't focused on that. It's like, there's one thing they're focused on, and you know, the players don't really care about that. It's right. Window dressing at best.
Right. All right. Last question. Mark Woodworth, there was a lot of orange at the media day. I know CTB says he isn't on social media, but it felt like he was trolling. Any clue? If so, it was awesome.
Man, I hope they were trolling us. I really do. That would
that'd be great.
Make me happier. But yeah, it was nice. I mean, we said it. We want to see orange uniforms. Chris, you looked great in your orange uniform. The big game.
Stunning.
Orange. I want to see it make a rich and stunning. Yeah, just so striking. And I want to see it make a return. Hopefully, it would be nice that they would do it. I'm not holding my breath. There was a point several years ago where I thought, yeah, you know, maybe they'll actually do it. And if it happens now, I'll be overjoyed. Yeah. But I'm not sitting there.
It seemed like it. Unless it impacts the game somehow, which it won't, then I don't see it happening either. But maybe when we get fans back and he'll actually, I don't know.
I'll say this. Like, I am all for, you know, history and pageantry and getting psyched up. And I know I mentioned this on one of our last podcasts, how Notre Dame treats their green jerseys. It's not a given that they're going to wear them every year. But there should be, and I'm rooting for this, and I hope TB and the staff hears me on this. There are times when there's going to be a team that comes into JPJ and they're the number one ranked team in the country. Let's roll out some orange uniforms and get the, you know, it's just a little bit added juice for the fans,
right?
For the media, for the players before the game, because they get hype. You'd be like, you know, the Notre Dame players would tell you when they wear the green, they're really excited.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get the orange going for UVA. Let's get the crowd cranked up, get everybody rocking. And you know what? That's just good for the environment. It's good for recruiting. It's good for everybody.
You know, and TB doesn't seem against like the motivational things, the door knocker and all, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, the jersey, you break out those new jerseys before game. When would you guys find out that you were wearing the orange jerseys? Would you suspect? Would it be a couple hours before the game or what?
We wore them, you know, truthfully, because they were part of our regular rotation. We would show up to the arena and they would just be put out. Like, right. We didn't, it wasn't a special jersey when I played. It was white, blue, and orange.
Right.
We would be excited because the orange jerseys didn't have the cheese grater effect that the white and the blue ones did. So we liked them. They were like silky.
Right.
And that was a big deal. But I'll tell you, making something like little traditions like that, little nuances, and that gets a fan base fired up. That gets players fired up. It's a recruiting tool. I think it'd be really cool.
My counter to that would be, if you need a jersey to fire you up, then, you know.
But that's everything helps. I mean,
I agree. It doesn't hurt, surely, but.
Right.
And you're right. And by the way, it's really not that much for the players. Let's be honest. Once the ball goes up on the tip,
it doesn't matter.
You're not checking out your, you know, tank top as you run down the floor. But it's a cool thing for the students. It's a cool thing for the administration, for the media, and maybe there's 0.5% that juices the players up a little bit.
I like it. That was the last submitted question, so appreciate that. The other one was, preseason we're number one in the ACC rankings. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, guys?
I mean, I think it's cool. It was surprising to find it's the first time since 82-83 season we were picked to finish first in the ACC. And of course, that's not the season from Chaminade was that season. Yep. And then it ended with NC State. So it's not necessarily the season everyone wants to remember. And if you look back over the last 7 years or the last seven times, I believe Duke has been picked to finish first. UVA has finished first four of those times. So the surest sign that the Hoos are going to win the conference is Duke being picked to finish
first. Interesting. I like that.
with us picked, I'm not sure what it says other than it's a nod of respect to Tony Bennett's program,
yeah.
Not just the guys that he brings back. He's not bringing back necessarily guys. I mean, Sam Hauser came second in the voting for player of the year, and he's not played a minute in the ACC. So I think it says a lot about what people have come to believe about Tony Bennett and his program and the system that he has there more than anything. But we'll see what happens. I'm bullish on the season, obviously.
I also think it's a team this year, right? And anybody I've talked to who has had a chance to watch practice and talk to the coaching staff, it's a talented team. There's a lot of guys that can play this year. So I think that's also what it's an indication and reflection of how talented they are. And based on the other teams in the ACC, I think Florida State's has a very talented team. Duke is always going to be good, and they're always going to be tough to beat at home. I don't know, where was NC in that, third or fourth? Do you know?
Carolina or is NC State?
UNC. Sorry.
UNC. I think they were picked fourth. So I think
four. They were four.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, my pick would be Virginia, Florida State, Duke, UNC. But what do I know? I thought UNC would have won it all last year. So I don't do this kind of prognostication anymore.
You know who this is nice for? This is nice for every guy on the team to reflect on when they're 40 years old. Okay. This is when they look back and they are telling their, 10, 12 year old kid, we were ranked number one in 2020, the worst year ever, by the way, in terms of just environmental and everything. We were ranked number one, and that's when it's going to matter. Right now, all it's done, I think, is create, a neat media day. The coaches have questions to answer. And I think Phony said something really important. This is a nice validation for Tony and staff for what they've accomplished and the consistency, since he's been here. But at the end of the day, it's a really great thing to talk about when you're 42 and both your knees hurt and you're making school lunches at 6:45 in the morning.
I was number one once.
So what was the highest you guys were ranked when you played, when you were at who?
That's a great question. And T-Dub is going to check this, so I feel like I need to be accurate.
I'm going
to
say sixth because you guys – what year did you graduate, 95?
I graduated 93, but I had one more year, so I was on the 94 team.
You were on the 94.
You mean preseason ranking or just overall ranking, Mark?
Just at any time, what was their highest ranking?
At one point, we played Duke – My fourth year, we played Duke at Duke and won, and that made us like 11 or 12 and 0, and I think we were like fourth or fifth, but then we had to go play UNC on that early Saturday, like noon game, and we got destroyed, and I don't think we captured the, because of the way the rankings work by week, I think we were able to capture that Duke win because it was offset by a massacre. But I'm going to say we were like sixth. But T-Dub, you can check.
Which year did you think this was? 94, 95?
It's either 93 or 94.
So 93, 94.
The highest we ranked. Because we were.
It was 7. 92, 93. We got Duke. Yeah, 92-93, the highest rank was 7.
Okay.
Week 10. And then 93-94, 16. And then 94-95, the highest was 11.
Yeah, so it was TJ Fresh. Yeah, that was that year. I think Corey was a freshman.
It's pretty incredible.
What was that, 92-93?
Yeah, 92-93.
Yeah, so we were six. And that's what I'm saying. We were six, and we beat Duke at Duke, who was ranked really highly. And then, like, we didn't get to capture it because we got slaughtered at UNC, so it sort of nullified the impressive win at Cameron.
Incredible.
Incredible to rank that high. in Des Moines College.
It's incredible how bad your memory gets as you get older.
But you would remember that 42, 43, making those lunches.
Yeah. That's
46, 47. That's what you talk about.
So go ahead and subscribe now for the Sam Houser 2050 podcast about being number one.
I was a champion.
No, this is great.
I'm excited for the season, and our very first game is on something called Flow Hoops, which
yeah, I saw that.
You have to pay $12 a month for it. So that's fantastic.
And one more thing that happened today, Ivy League canceled their winter
sports. That.
I don't know if that's a sign of things to come, considering they were the first to cancel last year before the tournament. But
they were, and then they were the first to cancel football, and the other teams are muddling by. I mean, obviously, there have been a lot of cancellations. Yeah, T-Dub, and maybe we've talked about this on the show. We've talked about this, though. The Ivy Leagues have the benefit of being able to make these decisions without a little more objectively, we'll say.
All right.
Than some of the other conferences, because their money does not come from their sports performances. Yes, those programs, I'm sure, do okay, but they are not the Power Five schools. They're not the big schools where, I mean, you were talking about tens of millions of dollars that are moving around. So this doesn't make them smarter. It just means when they're weighing it, their risk assessment is different than the rest of the conferences. And I don't know what the right decision is. I mean, football, there have been a lot of cancellations. Yeah, but we're having a football season.
Right.
And it seems to be going okay. Can basketball, an indoor sport, do that? There's fewer guys on the teams. There's fewer people involved. It remains to be seen. So I don't know that you give the Ivy League any special credit. Hey, that's their decision. And because ultimately what every school is doing, what every conference is doing, is trying to weigh what is really an unknown risk against all these known risks. They know what's going to happen to revenue. They know what's going to happen to these various programs that they're trying to support. If they don't do it, they do not know the risk in terms of the human cost, the people that are going to get sick, possibly die from it, the spread from fans being out the games, all that. That's what they can't weigh, but they're still trying to weigh those two things against each other. The Ivy League makes their decision. The other schools are going to make their decision. I don't know what's right, because if you don't know what that other variable is, it's impossible for us to judge at this point.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking about when that hit the tape today. You know, the timing on that is really interesting, because what does the NCAA do if there is a really good player that plays at Harvard, for instance, and is on track to graduate, but he is being talked about as a, you know, maybe a free agent type guy, or maybe a second round pick, or, you know, and they cancel the season through no fault of his own. He is essentially done for the year. Does the NCAA take into account, wow, the conference shut him down? Can he go to a Virginia or an Ohio State or UCLA? Or, you know, that's really interesting to me, because right now is the perfect time, right? Classes are from the first semester are kind of coming to an end. The season really hasn't ramped up yet. How do they handle that? And you know, my guess is that they will not do anything and not allow anything. But I think it warrants discussion around a kid that's really a good player through no fault of his own. His senior year is wiped out. Let him go play. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It makes sense from the student athlete standpoint. It would be absolute chaos at that level. But this is where I fall in terms of paying athletes and name and image likeness and stuff. Just because it would break the system doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. Right. If treating these guys as employees and giving them the same freedom as employees have is the right thing to do, if it breaks the system, then that's how it is, that you can't justify doing the wrong thing by saying, well, but we have this whole elaborate thing set up and it's going to come tumbling down if we do what's right. That's not the justification. So yeah, those guys probably should get that opportunity, but I can see where the NCAA wouldn't want it.
Right.
Yeah. The NCAA will say, oh, we'll just give you an extra year, come back next year. I guess that would be the NCAA's fix to it. But
I mean, that's probably
a delay in a year of your life seems like a strange compromise.
Right, because a lot of these guys in the Ivy Leagues probably, I mean, they know it's, you know, for them it might be, you know, playing ball in Turkey or going on, yep, you know, to investment banking or something, and so it's a different equation for those guys.
And also, we are number 4 in the AP poll. If you guys haven't seen that, it's pretty cool. The preseason national ranking, I should say.
So much respect for what they've done. You know, there's obviously going to be questions till we see it in action, but it's crazy. I mean, I remember it wasn't that long ago we'd be so excited about being ranked in the preseason.
Yeah, no kidding. And then UVA's announcement, they're going to allow 1,000 fans at JPJ for the game. So I think, Phony, you had a tweet about your giving level. It's probably going to be a wild
one. Yeah, I've done the extra 10% a year, but still, the level that puts me at, I expect to be waitlisted for the Kent State game. And
yes,
waitlisted for Kent State. Those are probably words that have never been put together in that sequence.
I love it. I love it. What, T-Dub, is there a hurdle for getting in? How are they deciding? Is it pure lottery? Is it
giving priority points? It's priority points, which are based on your giving and all these other things.
Oh, okay.
How you increase your donation. And
you should be fine, Hav.
What about, but what about students? Are they letting, are they kind of on the
students are the other priority. So I expect a robust student section, but I don't know how they're going to space them out. I mean, part of the benefit of the Who Crew being there is all these people packed together, jumping around. I mean, if it's just scattered around the arena, I don't know.
Yeah. It's tough. Look, I am still having, this is sort of a confessional moment, but, I'm still having a hard time with watching sports on TV with either manufactured fans where they pipe in noise and there's a smattering, or like watching the Masters today. Had a different feel. Golf's a little different. I'm in SEC country. They've been gradually adding to the crowd base, and consequently they're having more and more cancellations. I think there's 4 football games canceled this weekend for SEC, but I really hope, I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I really hope we can get to a point where, you know, we're playing in front of fans, we're playing in front of students, we're playing in front of alumni, because that's what makes UVA so special, makes college sports so special. I'm not super optimistic that's going to happen this year, but we all need to say a prayer before we go to bed and hope that happens, because there's nothing like, you know, a big game in Charlottesville, and I hope we get back there one day soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And if that means we all need to sit out and wait a season before we have it so we can do it safely, then so be it, I guess.
Right. Are we going to have to wear a mask on the next mailbag? That's what I want to know. Are we good? Are we good to communicate electronically? Or
I think we should, just to be safe.
I think we're safe.
Our sound quality is already muffled enough. We probably should put another layer in there for the fans.
T-Dub, you've got the like Naked Gun headset on there.
Yeah.
Phony's got like he's talking to at the United Nations. You know, I got nothing. I gotta invest in some.
Are you in a minivan, Chris?
No, I'm in a Yukon.
Okay.
In a supermarket parking lot, because there's
the sound quality.
Activity at my house.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the best sound quality.
Because that's where he lives now.
I sleep in here.
On a very special episode of Votes' Corner, we reveal that Hav lives in a Yukon.
A Yukon down by the river, right?
All right. Right on time for you, Phony. You get your dinner in 7 minutes.
Yeah, my girl's making me a special dinner tonight, so I'm excited.
What do you got? Do you know what it is?
I don't know what it is. Some shrimp. She came on with shrimp, so I don't know what she's doing.
Very solid.
She does a lot of Mexican stuff. She likes a lot. She's from Texas, so she likes a lot of that Southwestern stuff. So hopefully it's that direction, but we'll see.
Damn, that sounds good. I'm jealous. Cool. T-Dub, what's on the menu for you tonight?
Probably Pop-Tarts again. No, I'm kidding. I have no idea. We're with my in-laws. They cook every night, so we get a good mix. Stuff? Yeah, just a mix of Chinese food. How about you guys? What are you doing?
I'm going to walk into a, so half of the kids have a, what do they call it? Like teacher workshop day. So the kids are out of school. So it seems to happen more and more frequently now, but I'm walking into probably a Greek salad and some cheese pizza. That's really cold.
Mark, you're a foodie. What are you doing?
Sweet potatoes.
Yep.
Spinach.
Nice.
Maybe a little chicken, avocado, and green beans.
Nice.
Oh wow.
You've been on the health kick for a while now, so.
No. That's like, what are you like? Are you training for Mr. Universe or something? What's going on?
But I am headed to Charlottesville this weekend, and I'm so looking forward to Roots, a Roots Bowl. I'm going to go to Mangione's. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Where Erica, who used to be the manager.
Shout out. School, are you doing a live NBA? Jay Willie show on Monday?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
I'm not sure how long we're staying. Kobe's signing his last letter of intent, so we're going to go down there and check him out and support him.
Awesome.
And a shout out to Kobe.
Is White Spot still going?
It is.
I think so, yeah.
We just lost Little John's. That's the one we lost.
I saw that. Yeah, but didn't someone buy it or they?
I think they bought it. No, I think they bought it, but they couldn't get the funds together to reopen it.
All right. That's a tragedy, but
yeah. I don't think it's out of the question, but it's still. I think it's the sign on the door is closed. So shame. Anyway, we will have for the fans. Jay Willie show Monday, live on the Facebook group. If you want us to do this live again, the UVA Hoops group, definitely leave us a comment. We'll put it back up there for the Focus Corner. I mean, anything else, guys? Are we done?
No, that's it, man. It's exciting. Hopefully, keep your fingers crossed. Louisville on Saturday football.
Oh yeah,
fingers crossed.
Keep those tests coming back the right direction.
That's right.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, man.
All right, fellas. Have a good night.
Yep.
All right. Good night. Peace.